806 FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings on a Friday. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Glad to have you here. Phone number 343-0106. 343-0106. Couple questions this morning. Things on my mind. And of course, we'll tackle what's on your mind as well at 343-0106. Give us a call there. One of them is, after yesterday's tweet from President Trump about delaying the election, do you think he was just trolling out there, or do you think that was serious? As the president talked about that the elections would be he's worried about the mail-in ballots, mm-hmm. and it's being rigged on this. But then you had Mitch McConnell come out pretty quickly and say the elections will go on, mm-hmm. on schedule.
Yeah, he got pushback from both sides of the aisle on that tweet. But a lot of people saying that he would sign an executive order to delay the elections. I don't remember seeing that in the tweet.
I think I didn't see that in the tweet either.
That it might need to be delayed. But I think the best
Congress has to do it.
I can't remember who said it yesterday. One of the lawmakers, they said, you know, we've had the election in that first week of November, I guess the first Tuesday of the month, for a long time, even fought a civil war, and were able to keep that rolling. So I don't see that changing in the near future, but was it a troll? I think that's the question of the day. Was he just trying to mess with everyone?
He did say later in a tweet, I want to have the election, but I also don't want to wait for 3 months to find out that all the ballots are missing and the election won't mean anything. That's what's going to happen, and everyone knows it. So there's some poison pilling going on in it already. But there's a lot of questions. We've had interviews on this show with people that have studied this about not just the fraudulent activities, you know, with mail-in, but also just mistakes, mm-hmm. that are made.
Yeah, and the president pointed to what's happening in New York, and they've had their own issue over this last month with mail-in voting. I guess the results for some of their district elections have taken more than a month to decide because they botched their mail-in voting operation. And the president kind of used that as the crux of his statement his tweet yesterday, where he said, listen, if they can't get this right in New York, and it's been a month since these district elections, mm-hmm. took place.
What about over the whole country?
Yeah, when the whole country does that, what will happen then? And if you think that the political show right now is insane, if we get to November, towards the middle of November, end of November, and they don't have all the results for the national election, things are going to be absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, if they can't wrap it up using on TV their big charts and the stand-up things and showing you the states and wrap those numbers up by the time midnight comes, a different thing. It'll be back to the hanging chads in Florida and all that. Also, so we'll talk about that this hour. Also, I had Dalton explain it to me earlier because I was trying to understand. So SEC decided to go through with this conference-only 10-game schedule. Mm-hmm. And I was just this has been framed, and you can listen to Feinbaum in the afternoon, the discussion on it. This has been framed for Sports Night on Monday nights. The discussion has been framed about doing this to protect the student athletes, the coaches, and all that from the spread of COVID-19.
Right.
I'm just hayseed enough to say I don't get it. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, you talk about the example of South Carolina within conference can travel as far as Arkansas,
right,
to go play a game, but can't go down the road to Clemson,
yeah,
to play a game. Is this about the geography of keeping people from bouncing around the country and spreading coronavirus, which, I mean, the coronavirus is present in all the states, mm-hmm. as it is, as some places worse than others, but it's present in all the states. Or what is this about? And you kind of explained this earlier, if you'll tell everybody what you were saying, because I thought this was interesting.
Yeah, so we know that it appears, as of right now, the bubbles are working for the NBA and the NHL, who are resuming their seasons. NBA last night, right. NHL will get started again tomorrow.
But that is geographically locked down,
exactly,
to one place.
They've got professional athletes who are being paid staying in one place under strict rules, and they're able to make that happen. Major League Baseball went a bit of a different direction. The players didn't want to do the bubble thing out in Arizona, so they decided decided they would play in their home stadiums. They did limit the schedules, but we've already seen, I mean, 3 days into the season, Miami Marlins players tested positive. There were some reports that they enjoyed a night out in Atlanta while they were playing the Braves in some exhibition games, and maybe that's how this new outbreak started on that team, but they've already had to cancel or at least postpone some of these early season games. Now, of course, you can't put a bubble around the NCAA. It makes up the entirety of America, and you can't even put a bubble around specific schools. You've got school going on. People coming and leaving campus, players going to class and leaving. So they're going to try to do basically the same thing that Major League Baseball is doing and play these games probably without fans in attendance, try to limit travel as much as possible and get these games in. But then, just like you were wondering, I was wondering initially too, and still kind of am, what difference does it make if South Carolina has played Clemson year after year, and I don't know how long that drive is, but it's not as long as the drive to Arkansas or any of the other SEC schools that South Carolina may have. So what's the point? Well, it seems to me that kind of reading around that the entire point of these Power Five conferences, which hold all the cards right now in the NCAA, only having their conference play these games is because they're able to make more decisions more quickly about those games. So if you have a game between South Carolina and Clemson and it's postponed because there's a massive outbreak of cases on the South Carolina team, that's going to be a little bit more difficult for not only the schools themselves, South Carolina and Clemson, to agree on what should be done now that that game has been postponed, but then you also have league leaders involved, the SEC, the ACC. You have monetary issues. I'm not sure. When you've got two Power Five schools, I'm not sure what the money situation is there. But take a Group of Five game, for example. When South Alabama was scheduled to go play Florida, Florida was going to pay pretty good money.
Yeah, big time to go beat up on them.
Yeah, to have South Alabama come to town. So when you make it only conference only, it also makes it easier for that situation too. And if the South Alabama Florida game was scheduled to go on, but week of Florida ends up having a bunch of cases, then South Alabama would say, hey, where's our money? We showed up, we're ready to play. So it also makes it easier for the conference to kind of make those decisions.
So
quickly.
I mean, when we peel back the onion here, it's a business decision and a management decision more than it. I mean, I know it's cloaked in the fact that they're going to keep everybody safe, but really, it's not.
Yeah, it streamlines their decision making process, and really, when it comes down to it, it comes down to the money. And not playing a season at all would have massive financial ramifications. But I think, you know, even just having these conference only games, they're going to be able to make some of that TV money, you know, the billions of dollars that are involved in that. And it's most important. I think it's more important for these teams in the Power Five conferences to have their season go on in their conference than it is for them to play in the playoff. I think that it's more important for them that they at least play 10 games, and even if there weren't a playoff or a national championship game, monetarily and as a business decision, it's better for them to at least get those games played. I still think they're going to play a college football playoff.
How is that going to work?
It's interesting, but at that point, you're only dealing with four teams, and if those teams have been all right fighting this virus the entire year, then I imagine there's some kind of scenario where maybe they bubble those teams and play it at the end of the year. Now, for the rest of bowl season, I have no idea how they're going to be able to do that. You know, they play games in the Bahamas and Hawaii. That will be difficult. But with South Alabama, for instance, they already had to make a scheduling change earlier when the SWAC conference canceled. And that did away with the first game in the new Hancock Whitney Stadium on campus. They were supposed to host
this darn near ready to go.
Yeah, they were going to host Grambling State. Well, Grambling State season was canceled. So that left in the first 4 weeks of the season before South gets into conference play, they have two games against Conference USA teams, Southern Miss and UAB, which is becoming a big rivalry. Already is, kind of. And then they had that game against Florida. Well, now the Florida game has been struck. So that leaves them with two games against Conference USA teams. It looks like, according to Brett McMurphy, Conference USA will allow their school to play as many non-conference games as they want,
but they got to have another conference accept them,
right? And he also said if they don't have another conference accept them, they can play teams within the conference, and that would count. But for South Alabama, that's big news because Southern Miss and UAB are in Conference USA. Depending on what the Sun Belt Athletic Directors decide today, They could decide to go conference only and then strike those games off the schedule. But if they don't, then they'll at least have those two games, Southern Miss and UAB, prior to the season. And one more thing about this, we're seeing these conferences move their games back. The ACC said they wouldn't play until September 12th. Right. The SEC kind of one-upped them and said, we're not going to start until September 26th. There was a real worry about the optics of the situation if you have amateur collegiate athletes take the field before the professional NFL athletes got out there. And with the cancellation of the NFL preseason, they're not scheduled to be on the field.
They got to move the date. Okay.
Because they were worried that if you send out, you know, Notre Dame and Navy mm-hmm. on August 25th, and the NFL doesn't get out there on the field until September 10th, then you have the questions, why are we sending our amateur athletes out there, our student athletes, as kind of a test case before the NFL?
For the pro guys.
So just optically, I think that's the main reason they're pushing the start of the season back. But it's going to be a year unlike any we've seen. Personally, I'm excited that we're going to have 10 SEC games this year.
Okay, so there will be no SEC action until the third week in September.
Yeah, September 26th will be the first Saturday.
Okay, and so I mean, almost a month mm-hmm. late.
Yeah, they were scheduled to start September 5th.
Oh, they were. Okay,
when SEC games, so 3 weeks exactly.
All right, so they're starting that late, and then will they, when they, I guess all the scheduling has changed. I mean, if you got that little magnet thing on your refrigerator that shows you, you know, your team's schedule for the year, that's all not happening.
Yeah, if you're somebody like me and you go to fbschedules.com constantly to see what's up on the next week of games, they're going to have to change a lot of things. And for the SEC, I mentioned it earlier, they only play 8 conference games per year, and there has been a push, even from Nick Saban, to add more conference games to the right. schedule. You know, even pre-pandemic, that was part of what they wanted. Well, now they've got to find out how they're going to schedule the extra 2 conference games. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing, I don't know.
Will there be a bye week or no bye week?
They are going to have a bye week okay. midseason, and then one the week before the now delayed SEC championship game
in
Atlanta.
Where you normally have your rivalry game. That's mm-hmm. rivalry weekend.
Yeah, they have rivalry weekend the last week of the year, and then I believe I might be wrong, but I think
the
there's always
before
been,
they had the Patsy game.
Yeah, and I think they normally go right from their final game that's scheduled into the conference championship game the next week. They've put a week in between the final game and the conference game now, championship game. I think that's as kind of a fail-safe in case they have to postpone one of these games. They can move it to that weekend. But major, major changes coming up for college football, and we still have to see, will they actually get out there on the field? So much of that will be determined by the trends in coronavirus numbers around the country.
Wow. Well, I appreciate that explanation. By the way, 130-some-odd miles between Columbia and Clemson. Mm. So, yeah.
Compared to a trip
Arkansas,
to Texas A&M.
Yeah. How about A&M? All right. Coming right back. Phone number 343-0106. Thank you, Kane. 824 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Our phone number, 343-0106. 343-0106. Saw this too, the latest discussion here in the Alabama senatorial race now, Tuberville versus Jones, and Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has listed many states as hot spots that require non-essential visitors to quarantine for 2 weeks if they come to D.C. You and I were talking about this morning. My parents were dealing with that, wanting to travel, and the state of Pennsylvania has put that up for the state of Alabama. If you come, you have to quarantine for 14 days.
Yeah.
So, which is keeping people from going if they... go for a couple days, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go and you got to quarantine. And of course, the question is, how will they know? But I mean, if you air travel wise, they're going to say where you're coming from. And mm-hmm. I mean, you know, do you want to? I guess you could do it on the down low and drive in or something like that. But yeah, they've got these rules. Just the way, remember, Florida had the deal where people coming from Louisiana would have to, if they're coming into Florida, we're going to have to go quarantine for 14 days.
I wonder how long before you have to clear customs when traveling from state to state. Are they going to put customs officers at each border?
Are they going to take your temperature?
Take your temperature. Yeah. Well, they've done that, clearly. Yeah. I can't remember how many states now, but there are so many, mostly in the Northeast, I think, that have put these quarantine bans out there where a number of states. And how about the finger pointing from the Northeast, specifically New York, where Cuomo, who was on TV basically every day for two and a half months is saying, look at us now. Yeah. Everything's great now. We did everything right. And those fools in Florida are doing it wrong. But the initial major screw up in New York was when they sent the elderly who did test positive for the virus
to nursing homes.
Back into nursing homes. And we still haven't seen a death toll like any other state, any other city, like we saw in New York City.
For sure.
Pretty amazing the political finger pointing going on from there now. And of course, New York has banned, like, I think 22 or 23 states from visiting now. So tough if you had a summer plan and it looked like you might be able to get out and go.
Oh, it stinks for vacation stuff. Yeah, it really does. And then, so this story here, so they're on Tuberville now for Washington because a picture came out. They had Representative Bruce Westerman out of Arkansas. You know, in Tuberville, Arkansas guy, though he's running here in Alabama, but roots in Arkansas. I guess they were together, and there's a picture, neither man wearing a mask or social distancing, and of course the Gladys Kravitzes out there online were talking about that. But the issue was whether he should have to quarantine for 14 days coming into Washington, because he is not, if you're an elected official, and by the way, Congressman Bradley Byrne joins us on Midday Mobile today. We'll talk to him more about the new House rules for masks that Nancy Pelosi put in and all that. But they're essential, so they can travel and not quarantine. But because Tuberville is a candidate and not elected, you don't qualify that way. So according to the campaign advisor here, campaign manager for Tuberville, Paul Shashi, said Tuberville wasn't on a non-essential visit. According to Shashi, Tuberville was working hard to help determine the direction of this nation over the next several years and bring sanity back to the U.S. House. That's a campaign slogan, but I don't know if that qualifies. And listen, I can argue that the D.C. law is wrong. But if they have this deal where you're supposed to be quarantined and you go up and get pictures taken, and then, you know, people are asking, okay, well, if Sean or Dalton went up, they'd have to quarantine, why wouldn't Tuberville?
Yeah, and I was reading earlier that, Congress, they put in this big plan to get back up to D.C., that they were going to be cleaning the chambers and make it, like, the most spotless place in D.C. Well, I was reading that apparently during all the political arguments up there regarding the next stimulus bill and what to do about every single little decision, that they have not been able to keep that place as clean as they said they would. I guess they ran out of money for supplies, and so maybe it's not as safe for the congressmen and women to go up there as it was just a couple months ago. And interesting. So he's running for Senate, but they're saying because he's not a current elected official, then
you're not essential. Also, do we have, well, we have time before the break here. This story that we've talked about off air throughout the morning. This version of the story comes from ABC7 New York. It says, coronavirus news, the first dog with COVID in the United States dies. New York family details fight to get the pet tested. Now, point out that this is a story of Buddy, the six-year-old German Shepherd. It says a family from Staten Island described the last days of their dog, the first pet canine in the U.S. to test positive for COVID-19. The Mahoneys say Buddy, their six-year-old German Shepherd, started having trouble breathing in mid-April. On Easter, Robert Mahoney got a call confirming that he had tested positive for the virus. Who goes and gets the dog tested?
Yeah.
The Mahoneys do. Said he'd been dealing with symptoms for weeks, and during that time, Buddy developed thick mucus in his nose, started breathing heavily. Family says so little was known about the virus in animals, and so much of the response was focused on saving human lives, it was difficult getting Buddy tested. Yes, because they were saving human lives. Human beings. As they searched for a veterinarian that would test for COVID-19, Buddy's condition continued to deteriorate. He lost weight and became lethargic. Buddy was put on antibiotics, later steroids, after testing detected a heart murmur. It took the family a month, but the Bay Street Animal Hospital finally agreed to administer Buddy a test, which came back positive. Family's other dog, a 10-month-old German Shepherd named Duke, was also tested. His results came back negative. Additional testing just 5 days later showed the virus was no longer in Buddy's system, though he did have the antibodies confirming he had the virus. All right.
So he got an antibodies test?
Yes.
Wow.
So Mahoney said about every 2 weeks a new problem would arise. He could no longer control his bladder. His breathing grew heavier. He developed trouble walking. Then they said on the morning of July 11th, Allison Mahoney found Buddy in the kitchen throwing up clotted blood. Okay, so they go through this whole thing. Family says most confusing part of all of it was the fact that no one seemed interested in learning from Buddy's death or studying what role COVID-19 played in it. But the I'm going to point out that the German Shepherd also had lymphoma, also had cancer. So
buried in the story there.
Yeah, they had that. But he is, I guess, being put down as a stat here for the first canine coronavirus death. So there's Buddy. Rest in peace, Buddy. We'll be right back.
836 FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings on a Friday. And right now it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, so final day of the month. That means you got to get out to McConnell and get that deal while it lasts. Tell us, what can we get when we come over to McConnell?
That's right. We got the employee pricing going on SUVs. You know, we've been harping on this all month long, but, I mean, it's the deal. Employee pricing plus the rebates, I mean, that's the deal. Also, we got another truckload of trucks yesterday, so our truck inventory is swelling again, which is great. So we can get them good trades. And speaking of good trades, I mean, don't forget, we will buy your car. Just call Gene or I, give us a VIN. We'll give you a price right over the telephone, VIN and the miles. And if you want to check out our inventory, check it out on McConnellAutomotive.com. And like I said, got any questions, call Gene or I, 251-476-4141.
All right. We appreciate it, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, to the text line here, and the phone line's open for you as well at 343-0106, 343-0106. Blaine says, what happened to the dry cough symptom? Is that still a thing? Oh, yeah, that's still a thing for sure. He said, like the tiger in New York that contracted the virus. That was the first feline. It was two tigers up there?
Yeah, remember that story. And that was when
I was going nuts because they were wasting tests on, I mean, I'm not being anti-tiger, but, I mean, let's get the humans tested first.
Yeah, because that was during a time when, I mean, New York was absolutely going through it, but nationwide there was such a severe lack in testing early on during this pandemic that to waste one, some people say it's not a waste, but to use one on a feline.
Now, it's not that I would say you wouldn't test the animal, but if there was a human waiting on a test, mm-hmm. and then you use it on the human being. And that's not being anti-feline, it's just being pro-human.
Yeah, I guess now it's maybe a little more forgivable to test Buddy the German Shepherd now that we're averaging right around 800,000 tests per day nationally and getting closer and closer to 1 million. But still, I guess, you know, there's so many different aspects of this virus that scientists, everyone's trying to figure out, that maybe all information is, even if it's pet related, helps try to figure this thing out. But you mentioned it in that last story about Buddy, that it was kind of, we're all going to see the headlines today. And I think National Geographic, they ran it with exclusive mm-hmm. first mm-hmm. dog to die from COVID-19. But they say there in the story that the dog had lymphoma. And yeah. a couple veterinarians who didn't get up close and personal with Buddy during his sickness, they said, yeah, it looks like the dog had cancer. That might have been what killed him. But we know what leads in national media stories, and of course you're going to see that everywhere. But yeah, pretty interesting that I guess they think he might have died from COVID-19. Others are saying lymphoma. Still, it grabs headlines, that's for sure.
Yeah, so the story of Buddy there. And listen, it stinks for that family. I mean, that's their dog, you know, they love the dog. But, you know, it's, we're going to start looking at this other question, though. It does bring up, I think there is a reason to have interest in dogs and cats getting this, because you talk about this virus and whether it's from bats or pangolins or whatever. Let's take you in the time machine back to the early discussion of coronavirus and COVID-19. They're saying it, you know, comes from, and whether the bats were in the laboratory, they were in the cave, or the pangolin, whatever it was, comes from a critter. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about it in the past, swine flu and bird flu and all this, is a virus's ability to jump from one species to another. And so you look at this and say, if this is, in these cases, they're testing the German Shepherd and the tigers and all that, and they have COVID, then now it's shifting and it's transmittable to yet another species. Then you ask the question, okay, well, then if it gets out, how many other species can it be in? And can that be a repository for the disease. Like, you can get herd immunity and work on human beings and getting everything, you know, whether through vaccine or through time with herd immunity, getting more people resistant mm-hmm. to the virus. But then if it goes into a critter and then somewhat mutates in that critter, could it come back out, you know, when you're playing with Fido, you know, and you're playing with your dog, and then it picked it up at the dog park from another dog, and it's now another version. I don't know that this is true. I'm not trying to, like, be, you know, fear-mongering, because mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's a worthwhile question. If that disease went from bats to humans, and it goes from humans to canines and felines, if this is accurate in these stories, then does it bounce around in those critters and get some kind of mutation and
right.
then bounce back into human beings in a way that we might not have the antibodies for? I don't know that that could happen, but at least if this, what's been explained, is true, it has gone from one species to another species to yet two more species.
Yeah, that would be terrifying if the virus can do what you were saying. I guess the USDA has some stats. They said that fewer than 25 dogs and cats are confirmed to be infected with coronavirus. So that means at least 25 have been tested right. over the last couple of months. I wonder how many they've tested and have come back negative for these animals. But
hey, local vets.
Have you tested any
yes.
animals for coronavirus?
Have you had your clients come in with their animals and say they want them tested for coronavirus? Please, we'll open up local vets, 343-0106. Have you gotten a request for a COVID-19 test for the dogs or the cats or hamsters or whatever other people have, you know, guinea pigs?
Yeah.
Have somebody brought their pet in and here locally and asked you to test them?
Well, you mentioned earlier the origination of this virus
mm-hmm.
and whether it came from a pangolin or a bat or the lab over there in China. There is a survey out that I found pretty interesting from the Pew Research Center, and they did some polling. And, you know, the national conversation, anytime anyone says China virus, it seems like everyone is out to rebuke that person and say, you can't call it the China virus, that's racist. Well, they did this polling, and they found that 78% of Americans place a, quote, great deal or fair amount of the blame on China. Now, I don't know whether I should be amazed that 78% said
or not,
that,
or higher,
or that 22% said they don't blame China for this virus that is just you know, crushing us as a nation right now. And then they had 73% of these respondents said they had unfavorable views of China. That has risen 26 points since 2018. They surveyed over 1,000 Americans. They also found that 77% of these people said that they either have, quote, not too much confidence or no confidence at all that Chinese President Xi Jinping would do the right thing with regards to world affairs. But the story you get whenever you hear someone say China virus or
yeah.
bring back how this virus actually started, and they're saying, oh, you're racist. You can't. 78% of Americans believe that China is the reason behind this.
So 78% of Americans are racist by that.
Yeah, by that logic, yeah.
All right, coming right back. Grab your calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. By the way, Senate has left in Washington without passing anything here for economic stimulus. We'll get into that when we return. So live on Capitol Hill, testimony going on here. I got Dr. Redfield. You said Fauci.
Yep, Fauci's there too.
Who is now recommended maybe goggles or some kind of eye protection mm-hmm. along with your mask.
Yeah, so I've seen lots of people on my Facebook posting images of them wearing, you know, pool goggles.
Yes.
Some of those that even have like the Batman-looking mask that makes you look like a shark or something.
Makes it pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's what Fauci recommends. Now, cover the eyes.
Well, then, I mean, you could get... although I don't know how the breathing apparatus, if it fits for like a gas mask. It's got to. So you have the eye covering, you have the whole face. So you're going to have a gas mask up before you go in place. So maybe this is the next thing. By this time next week, we're talking about everybody out getting some kind of goggles. What goggles work? What goggles do you, I mean, what are you going to use here? How are you going to do this? Does it have to seal around your eyes, or does it just have to protect? Because the mask doesn't really seal. You know,
right?
I mean, it's not like it's over your nose and mouth, but it's not sealed. If you got a eyes, would it, could you get like ski goggles? Because they breathe. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We got to figure. So they got the testimony. We'll have to figure out today what they tell us the next recommendation is here on suiting up to go out and be around other people.
Prescription goggles, the next big thing. Maybe some bifocal goggles.
I need those. That's for sure. All right. Another part of the discussion, of course, is the economy here. And, you know, it's interesting. I was looking through even local TV websites here, and on different stations, they had, you know, one story of how this business is just profiting, doing so very well. This other one's closing. You know, this, what's going on right now has actually been a boon to some businesses out there. It's been tough for others, but been a boon to some businesses out there. And, you know, one of the things that people do, they're staying around their house. They're thinking about projects there more at home. It's like my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. His company is busy getting rid of junk for people at their homes, their storage units, their offices. They've had a little more extra time to go, we need to get rid of this stuff. We need to get organized. Listen, I've done the same thing in my house that y'all deal with. And the people I use, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, get Trey and his crew to come to your house, come to your office, come to your storage unit, and get rid of your junk. Pretty easy, too. You go online and make your appointment. You agree on an appointment time, specific time. It's really refreshing, like a day and actual time that they're going to show up. And you do that by going to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or picking up the phone and calling 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and they'll book an appointment time with you. They'll show up. They'll quote you a price to get the job done. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done. So check them out. It's Mobile, Baldwin County. My buddy Trey's been doing it for 12 years here, doing great work with 1-800-GOT-JUNK and online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, and of course, the big headline here when it comes to the economy is the GDP drop. U.S. economy plunging at a titanic 32.9% rate in the second quarter and points to a drawn-out recovery here, which is frustrating because I'd say the economy, the metrics here, the economy as it was really, really good, and the fundamentals of the economy haven't changed. Now, the fundamentals, I guess, have been reset because of the coronavirus, but it's still the same. Like, there hasn't been anything changed in, other than maybe federal debt that's part of this. But 32% drop in this.
That's massive. It absolutely is, massive.
Yeah, so that's what... So story from MarketWatch. Says the economy badly battered by the coronavirus shrank at a record 32.9 annual pace in the second quarter, underscoring just how big of a hole the U.S. find itself in as it labors to recover from the deepest recession in American history. But it's not deepest recession, but not depression. So remember, semantics are important here. So a tidal wave of damage from the first global pandemic in a century was almost as bad as Wall Street expected. Analysts polled by MarketWatch had forecasted a 35% decline in the gross domestic product at an annual pace, according to the official scorecard of the U.S. economy. But let me point out that Wall Street's been banging.
Yeah.
The economy, they said, began to recover in mid-May after a severe contraction in the beginning of the quarter. But the U.S. faces a long road back, analysts say. Millions of Americans are still out of work. Thousands of businesses have closed. And many of those that remain open have had to scale back operations because of the tepid demand or ongoing government restrictions. All right. So let me point out, with that being said, then in Washington, you know, we're talking this week that they were working on the HEALS Act, H-E-A-I, it's acronyms, I know, acronyms always coming out of Washington, the HEALS Act, the Senate was working out, and they were going to try to reconcile that with the HEROES Act, Democrat bill that came out of the House. And remember, that led us to the discussion of Nancy Pelosi and her description of a giraffe and a flamingo and not being able to make babies and not mate those two. Well, the Senate is now, I guess, they've gone home for the weekend.
Unbelievable.
Without getting, so that means the stimulus payments, the additional stimulus payments that the president had talked about, 1,200, or he said the other day, he's out in Texas, he said it could even be more, you know, 1,200 per individual, you know, 2,400 for a couple, $500 per child. That would be delayed. The extension on PPP would be delayed. That means the questions about the unemployment assistance coming from the federal level, those are now, you know, the back and forth between the Democrats and Republicans on how much. Now it's going to be zero if they don't get something done on this.
Yeah, how difficult could this be? after passing that first act.
Obviously very difficult.
Why don't you look at what's worked and what hasn't worked so far and nail those down and say, these are going in the bill. Is there anything we wish we would have changed that would maybe make our economy better or help people out here? And then add those after the fact. But to argue to the point where they can't come to an agreement and they're taken off for the weekend before deciding on that, that's just, well, it, unfortunately, it fits what we all think of Washington already. But the fact that they can't find, like, it seems any common ground on this is pretty upsetting to me.
But and let's point out the crap that's going on here. You've got Democrats in this that are putting in things that they know they can never get passed. They're messaging bills here in election year to show that they're going to say that we care more than the Republicans. At the same time, Republicans packed in defense spending in the HEALS Act. Okay, and then I know it's shocking in this world that I get PO'd at both parties, but there's a reason, because it's true. You've got the Democrats have stacked a bunch of crud in there, and the Republicans, and it's not that I'm anti-defense spending. This is not the place for the defense spending. This act, these acts, are to get the American economy restarted and take care of people that have lost jobs through no fault of their own, take care of the businesses that are struggling to go on. And when both parties are going to load up a bunch of extraneous items in it, they need to be called out. I wish they had a running whiteboard there in Washington where you'd write down, here's the people that presented this add-on. This is this congressman, this senator has added this in.
Yep.
And here's their name. The HEALS Act has got $18 billion in defense spending that is unrelated to COVID-19 response put in there. Okay, that, and people say, well, that's defense spending. This is not the right place for it. Deal with the defense spending in the National Defense Authorization Act. Deal with it elsewhere. This is the same kind of discussion of the Democrats putting in the Kennedy Center bailout or the money for these big Democrat cities that have gone belly up with their pension programs and all that. It's the same thing. You cannot call out the Democrats and not call out the Republicans for doing this crap.
Yeah, and I guess the reasoning they're saying they added that defense spending is because in one of the last bills or one of the last spending plans. Mm-hmm. They cut money from the Department of Defense, and that money actually went towards the building of the wall down on the southern border.
So now they're
trying to get that money back. But thinking about,
you don't do this because you know that the Democrats are going to say no. You are holding up, just like the Democrats have put stuff in there, the Republicans are going to say no to. So you're and not just a little bit no. There's such a gulf between the two in negotiation, they're not getting a deal struck.
Yeah, and they put all these things in the bill that are basically used for sacrifices, that they'll throw that in there, and then when they have to come together on agreement, a lot of this will fall out. Unfortunately, a lot of it will stick, but thinking about the amount of money we're talking about here just makes my head hurt. We spent so much money already, and I know a lot of it has helped, you know, your standard everyday American as we all deal with this pandemic. But the Democrats, that HEROES Act, they wanted to spend $3 trillion, and the Republicans answered with this $1 trillion bill. The thing we're arguing about here, $18 billion, a lot of money. But think of how much that makes out of $1 trillion. We are in trouble as a nation with this extra spending.
Absolutely. And one day, one day we're going to have to answer this. One day the bill is going to arrive at the table, so it's worth talking about. All right, we're on the way out of here for now. I'll be back in for that other show, Midday Mobile, that starts at noon, which, by the way, starting next week on Monday in just a few days, in between this show and Midday Mobile will be the debut of the Jeff Poor Show. Mm-hmm. So starting Monday at 9, 8-hour block of live local talk on FM Talk 106.5 every weekday. Jeff Poor Show debuts 9 o'clock Monday morning. Do not miss that. And don't miss Midday Mobile. My guest in the first hour, historian extraordinaire John Sledge. And then we'll talk to Congressman Bradley Byrne in hour 2.